our call. We call it a call, even though it is in a web seminar format. These calls started very small, 8 to 10 to 12 people, and then they got to have a lot of participants, and we found that the sound quality was hard to manage, and so we migrated to a different format. But the success of the calls is really based on how much interaction there is. And so there's two ways to interact during the call, and those of you seasoned people for the call, sorry to have to repeat this. One is you can submit questions at any time on the question part of your control panel. You can type that in, it's sent to us, and we will make sure to either answer it or direct that question to the person it's directed to. Or if you have called in, you can raise your little virtual hand and I will unmute you, and then you can ask your question directly. However, in order to utilize that function, you do have to have entered your audio PIN. So I can see from the control panel there are a number of people who did call in but didn't go and enter their PIN. So they wouldn't be able to speak themselves until they enter that audio PIN. Now, the hand-raising function isn't possible for those of you who are listening on your computer speakers. So if you have questions, we hope you will submit them in written format through the question panel. So with that, let's jump in to this month's call. Here we are, February 2014 already. And this call, again, is for, it's an open call. It's really focused on THP Plus, THP Plus foster care. It's a call to support providers. It's also a call to support counties and to really create a open format where we can discuss policy developments. And then each month we try and focus specifically on one relevant topic, and we're really excited about this month's topic. So here's our agenda for today. We are very happy to have Jessica Haspel, who is with Children Now, sorry about that, Jessica, who's going to kick off our call today with a short presentation about Medi-Cal enrollment, something it seems like we've been hearing about forever. And it is finally here and really happening, and we actually have some information. So rather than kind of knowing this is going to happen in the future, so we're very excited about that. Then we're going to shift our attention to THP Plus foster care, as we normally do, update you on providers and programs, and then share information about the latest quarterly report from our tracking system. Also look at our capacity chart, which talks about, which programs have a waiting list, which programs have open capacity, so that those of you who are out there who are in one of those circumstances can kind of know the lay of the land. And we also have some new policy guidance from DSS on out-of-county youth, which is something we always get questions about, is can youth from other counties participate in other counties' THP Plus programs? But I'm not going to tell you the answer, so you're going to have to wait till that part of the agenda. And then we're going to close out the call with the conversation about a sign-on letter that we're hoping many of you will join on to. But without further ado, I'd like to take a moment to just provide some context for this issue that Jessica is really going to cover for us, and particularly for this community. THP Plus is one of the kind of rare programs in the state that doesn't go 18 to 21. It actually goes age 18 to 24. And many, if not most, of the THP Plus providers use our participant tracking system. So they enter data about individual youth into the system. And so in preparation for the call, Simone pulled the latest numbers, and here's what we have as a community. We have 71% of our young people are covered with insurance, and 29% are not. So this is about 650 young people who are participating in THP Plus at this moment, who are very squarely eligible for this Medi-Cal extension. And so we're really looking forward to working with all of you who are THP Plus providers to identify these young people and do whatever we can to help them move on to Medi-Cal and get all those wonderful healthcare services. Now, the trick is how that actually happens, and so to break that down, we are joined by Jessica from Children Now. So before Jessica begins her presentation, I want to tell you a little bit about her. She is a child welfare policy associate with over a decade of experience in youth advocacy. Prior to joining Children Now, Jessica represented youth in the Illinois child welfare system. She also co-founded a nonprofit dedicated to supporting the needs of foster youth. She's a Stanford Law School graduate, and she, fortunate for us, returned to California in 2013 to continue working on behalf of disadvantaged children and youth. So welcome, Jessica. Thank you, Jessica. We're very excited to have you here, and I'll turn it over to you now.
Great. Thank you for inviting me to present. I'm excited to be here today and to have an opportunity to talk to people that are involved in the THP Plus program. This is obviously a really critical expansion for former foster youth to allow them to access health care up to the age of 26. So I think if we could go to the next slide. I think most people are probably familiar, but in case you're not, the Affordable Care Act extended Medi-Cal to age 26 for youth who were in foster care at age 18 or older. In California, that includes youth who were in foster care at age 18 or older in any state. So if a youth is living in California, even if they were in foster care in another state, they qualify for this expansion as California is implementing it. Two pieces of good information and guidance so far that have come out are a California Department of Healthcare Services information letter that was issued in mid-January that talks about the extension effective January 1 for any youth that are under the age of 26, as well as the CWA desk aid. And what that is CWA developed some information for county staff to help them in processing applications for former foster youth so that we can make sure that everyone's aware about the extension and can get former foster youth enrolled in the correct coverage group. I'm going to be hitting on some of the specific covered in each of these pieces of guidance in the later slides. So I just want people to be aware that these are two great pieces of resource or pieces of information if people want more specifics, but we'll be touching on them throughout the presentation. So we can move on to the next slide. I thought it might be helpful for people to have a bit of context for the extension. In California, youth former foster youth qualify for Medi-Cal coverage under this former foster care children's program. And before the Affordable Care Act, former foster youth between the ages of 18 up until their 21st birthday were eligible for the Medi-Cal former foster care children's program. Then California had provided budgeted funds for former foster youth that would have lost eligibility between July 1, 2013 and December 31st because they were turning 21. Those youth were able to maintain their Medi-Cal so that, you know, pre-ACA they didn't have to, like, lose it for 6 months and then re-sign up January 1. So there's that California bridge funding that affected those youth that were turning 21 in the 6 months preceding the ACA implementation. Now that we're post-January 1, the full extension has taken effect, and what that means is any former foster youth that are between the ages of 18 and 26 are now eligible for the former foster care children's program. If we could go to the next slide. So what does this actually mean? In the guidance that is referenced on the first slide, I mentioned that there's instructions to counties. And the counties are instructed to enroll youth into this former foster care children's program if they were in foster care at age 18 or older in any state. There's no income test or determination conducted for this population because their eligibility is only based on three things: It's whether they were in foster care on their 18th birthday or older in a state like California where you have the option to stay in longer. You're between the ages of 18 and 26, and you're a California resident. Because of that, there's no need to provide income information or go through the portions of applications that talk about income because your income does not factor into your eligibility. Right now, there's a number of programming things that need to be sorted out with the county systems. And so the instructions of the counties have been that the eligibility workers should be doing manual overrides to ensure that former foster youth 21 or older are assigned the correct aid code for this particular program. Right now, youth 18 to 21 should be able to be assigned the correct aid code, but the programming needs to be fixed to allow the correct aid code to be issued for those who have already turned 21 or older. Another critical instruction that the counties have received is if a youth attests to having been in foster care at age 18 or older, they should be enrolled immediately in Medi-Cal. They don't have to come to the county office with documentation proving that they were in foster care. The county will be able to do the verification, and while that's taking place, the youth should be able to be accessing services. If we could go to the next slide. So a question that I'm sure many youth have is what is actually covered in this Medi-Cal program? And essentially the former foster youth are going to get the same full scope Medi-Cal as the adult population. And what that means is they're going to get medical care, vision exams, substance abuse treatment, mental health services. Dental will start in May 2014. In terms of youth that are former foster youth that are not yet 21, they get some additional coverage because they qualify for the early and periodic screening, diagnosis, and treatment services. So what that means is they're going to be able to also get additional treatment services, whereas a youth, former foster youth 21 or older is going to get their vision exams covered. They're not going to get their glasses or contacts covered right now. A youth under 21, because of the EPSDT benefit, would get those additional treatment services covered as long as it was medically necessary. So there's a little bit of a difference depending on whether the youth is reached their 21st birthday or not. If we could go to the next slide. So what I think is probably most important for folks to know when they're helping youth to access this great new benefit is how does a youth actually sign up? And what I actually want to say first is for youth that are already enrolled, so current foster youth that are about to turn 21, those youth actually shouldn't have to do anything to remain covered. They should be rolled into the correct aid code on their 21st birthday, and that coverage should remain till 26. But a number of youth are now newly eligible for this coverage and will have to go and re-enroll. In terms of who's newly eligible, it would be a former foster youth that's 23. They would have previously lost their coverage because previously they would have only been entitled to this coverage until 21. Well, now they can go back and actually apply now that the full extension has taken place. So for that particular youth, the best way is to apply through the county. In most cases right now, the best option is to go in person to a local Medi-Cal office and use this NC250A form. This form is a really simple form. There's really only like about four questions on it, and it's a form just for former foster youth. It solicits all the information that's needed to determine if someone is eligible for the former foster care children's program. The reason I want to emphasize this is there are a lot of other forms out there, and then the single streamlined application, which is a much lengthier application. Former foster youth do not have to fill out those lengthier applications, and that's just important to keep in mind for this population. Children Now has developed a list of contacts in each county for Medi-Cal. What I will say about that is what we're trying to do is develop really specific information about best practices in each county, because we don't want to just send youth to any county office and they may encounter someone that does not yet fully understand the extension for this population or the fact that there's a streamlined process for them. So what we're doing is gathering information on the counties. There are a number of counties that have come up with some streamlined ways for former foster youth to apply. And what I mean by that is, for example, there's a number of counties that have identified a specific point person for this program, and youth can call that person directly to apply rather than even go into the Medi-Cal office. There's already a link to our list here, but I just want to say it's a growing list. So right now I think we have identified best practices for maybe about 8 counties. For the other counties, we have listed what the main Medi-Cal office is, but we're going to continuously be updating that list as we get more information. And if anyone looks at that list and they know about a specific contact in your county that you've been working with and we don't have them noted, please contact me so that we can add to our list and make sure we're getting the best information out to youth. The other thing I just want to hit, because I think it's pretty important, is right now former foster youth really shouldn't be applying through Covered California or through the online systems. There's a lot of barriers if they're trying to do so right now through those systems that have to deal with the programming issues that need to be fixed. And without getting too deep into it, two things I wanted to highlight. If a youth tries to apply through Covered California right now, the application is not yet programmed to be dynamic. So a former foster youth will have to fill out the full application, including answering income questions and providing documentation about various issues that aren't relevant to their eligibility, which is one of the main reasons why we're recommending that they not go through Covered California right now. The other issue is the programming's not there to assign them in the right coverage group. So former foster youth, if they go to a county office, should be immediately enrolled in coverage. If they apply through Covered California, they're not going to get that immediate enrollment. Their application is going to have to be sent over to the county for processing, and there's likely to be some significant delays. If we could go to the next slide. So Children Now has developed a website that is youth-friendly, and it's to give youth a number of tips for how to apply and help them navigate some of the current landscape of what enrollment barriers are out there. So some of the tips that we've highlighted on our How to Sign Up page is some key things that former foster youth may want to say or do when they go to apply to help make sure that they're enrolled properly. And so some of this I've already touched on, but they should be enrolled in the former foster care child coverage group. They should be assigned this 4M aid code. They don't need to provide any income information. They don't have to fill out the full application, just that one-page form. And they don't have to provide proof that they were in foster care at age 18 or older. They just need to have attest to it, and the county will take care of verifying it. It may be helpful while folks are still really getting up to speed on this new provision. If they're going into a general Medi-Cal office, if we haven't developed a specific contact for them yet, they may want to bring that information letter or the desk aid that are referenced on the first slide. And they don't need to understand what it says. It just may help to be able to hand that to a Medi-Cal worker if the person says they don't know about the program. If we could go to the next slide. So one of the big questions folks may have is, why does it matter whether or not a former foster youth is put into the former foster youth coverage group? And there's a number of benefits to being in that group. So an individual may qualify for Medi-Cal on a number of bases. For example, a former foster youth may qualify based on their former foster youth status, or they may also qualify based on the new income rules. The benefits to being put in the former foster youth coverage group and assigned a 4MA code are somewhat delineated on this slide. One is former foster youth have the ability to opt for fee-for-service Medi-Cal, which means they can then access care from any Medi-Cal provider instead of having to pick a health plan. The benefit of that is, as we all know, former foster youth generally tend to be a highly mobile population, so having the option to be in fee-for-service Medi-Cal gives them some more flexibility as far as who they get care from. The other benefit is that youth have the ability to maintain the coverage until age 26. It's a more simplified renewal or redetermination process than other populations who, for example, based on income, have to have their information checked and reevaluated each year. And again, this piece that there's no income requirement. So no matter how much the youth is earning, if they are working, they stay covered despite any changes in income. If we could go to the next slide. So a number of additional resources are out there. One of the resources I mentioned is Children Now has launched a website and a campaign to try and spread the word to former foster youth about the extension. And our website is URL is there. Please go check it out. We've got some FAQs for youth about common questions that are coming up. We have a whole page devoted to how to sign up. So we're hoping it's going to be a great resource for youth and those working with youth. If people are interested in trainings or presentations about the extension, feel free to contact myself or my colleague, Fatima Morales, and California Youth Connection and National Youth Network have also created some videos and are engaged in outreach as well to former foster youth. Another great resource is the Foster Care Ombudsman's Office has indicated that any youth who are experiencing trouble applying for Medi-Cal, or if they're not sure if they were in foster care on a certain date, if, say, someone's not sure, was I actually in foster care on my 18th birthday, they can call the Foster Care Ombudsman's Office, and the Foster Care Ombudsman staff can help with those issues. So that's another great resource. If we could go to the next slide. Another opportunity for more information is Children Now and the Youth Law Center are going to be hosting a web seminar on this topic on Thursday, February 27th, and there's a link here as to where you can go to register if you would like to participate in that and get some additional information. And certainly, if you can't participate in that and you still want additional information, feel free to reach out to myself or Fatima Morales, and we can try and assist with questions that you may have.
Thank you, Jessica. This is great. We do have a number of really good questions that I'm hoping we can get through. Why don't we turn to that, if that's all right with you?
Great.
So one question is, what do I do if I'm working with a young person who has applied online? The message I really got very clearly from you is at this point, online is not the way to go. So for this person who's working with a young person, they've done an online application, would you recommend they kind of parallel process and go into a county office?
I would, because frankly, there's a lot of delays happening right now. There's a lot of the pending online applications. You know, last I heard it's, 60,000 that still need to be processed. So I think that the best option is in order to get that youth into coverage quickly and make sure they're in the right coverage group is to go to the county at this point. I think the county is dealing with the fact that they're getting there may be duplicate applications out there because of the glitches that they're working through with the online system.
Okay, so your guidance is don't worry about that. Get the coverage the young people need. My second question is submitted from someone who said what they're, we know over by age 21, 52% of former foster youth who are young women will be young parents. Working with a young person who has Medi-Cal, because she is a young parent, should she try and seek coverage in this new coverage group?
Well, you know, I think that she probably should speak with her current Medi-Cal eligibility worker, if she's already in Medi-Cal, to see whether or not there would be a benefit to her asking to switch to the different coverage group. The what is covered is should be the same for the adult income group and the former foster youth group. As I mentioned earlier, there are some benefits to being in the former foster youth group, but I think that it's going to be a case-by-case situation whether or not, especially for a parenting youth, whether it makes sense to ask to switch. So I don't want to give a blanket statement for that. I would say I would recommend that that person talk to their eligibility worker or, I'm happy to, talk further with whoever's question it is to kind of help them think through what benefits there may be. One thing I was going to mention is, we've been telling former foster youth, if you're a former foster youth, you don't have to fill out the full application. You can skip the income questions. Obviously, for youth that have children, we want to make sure the children are covered as well. And so if they're not already covered, they need, the youth should be looking into what coverage options exist for their children and filling out, they may need to fill out a full application, including income information, to determine if their child qualifies.
Okay. Well, good. That is another question. This is kind of different aspects of, or different categories of young people. Let's say a young person is convicted of a crime, maybe spends some time in jail, comes out, now is 24 or something. Does that make the young person ineligible? Are they still categorically eligible?
The fact that someone may have been convicted of a crime is not, that shouldn't affect the eligibility. What it comes down to is, was this person in foster care at age 18 or older? Are they a California resident? And are they within this requisite age group of 18 to 26? So you really need to look at those three criteria.
Okay. Another question, someone said, what about youth who exit to guardianship? Like if a young person exits to guardianship at age 16 and over, we extend their support till age 21. Is it the same for this policy, or how does it work if you exit the guardianship as an older youth?
Sure. No, if you exit to guardianship before your 18th birthday, your case remains closed. You would not, per the federal guidance, be considered in foster care for purposes of this rule or this expansion. So youth who are under guardianship at 18 won't qualify for the up to 26. They should qualify for Medi-Cal up until whatever point in time their guardianship assistance payments end. So if a youth is getting the KINGAP assistance payments and that's going up to 21, they should be able to continue to be receiving their Medi-Cal. One caveat is youth who may have closed a guardianship, but then their case is reopened and they are in foster care at age 18 or older, there may be an exception for them to qualify because they technically meet each of these requirements. But if the youth case closes prior to 18 and it stays closed, then they're not considered to meet the criteria for in foster care at age 18 or older.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty clear. That's very clear. So this attestation, this word is used in the desk aid, and it's used, in this conversation. And I think you've been very clear, but if you could just kind of say it again, because one thing, I was recently on a call with a bunch of people from a bunch of different states, and, California really took the high road on this policy. You don't have to allow this attestation. You can. A state has the option to require written verification, and California took this option, which I think it took a lot of very progressive options, frankly, which is a credit to a lot of different people. But could you just say a little bit more about the attestation, because it's a strange word, it's one young people don't know, and how can we make sure that when a young person goes into an office, they can explain that?
Sure, and basically, you know, attestation, what we're saying is if they self-identify, if they say, I'm a former foster youth, I was in foster care at age 18 or older, that is an attestation. It really them just, you know, confirming that that's the case, checking the box on the form that says and signing, saying, I'm saying I was in foster care at age 18 or older. That's what we mean by attestation.
Well, great. So I think we'll take one or two more questions. I think you're going to have a lot of interest in that web seminar you're doing, because I don't think we'll be able to get through all the questions. One question is, do the youth need to renew their Medi-Cal every year? So what is the renewal or certification process? How does that work?
Sure. Well, and this question is a little bit difficult for me to answer with really concrete information, because the state is still working on the specifics about what that's going to look like for former foster youth. We know that per the state statute, it has to be a simplified renewal process or redetermination process. But in terms of whether or not the youth will have to, will even get something in the mail that they're asked to fill out, that's still kind of being sorted out. What I will say is, you know, the counties are supposed to be able to do an ex parte review of the information that's needed to determine that the person is still eligible at the annual time period. And what I mean by that is the three criteria being in foster care at age 18 or older, that will have already been verified at the time the youth was originally found eligible for the coverage. So that's an unchanging eligibility determination that won't have to be relooked at. By looking at the person's date of birth, the county will be able to tell, yes, this person is still within the age group that is allowed to be in this coverage group. So really then the only additional piece that comes in is, are they still a California resident? The county should have all the information available to them on a yearly basis to be able to determine this person continues to qualify without even having to gather more information from the individual. The way also the state law reads is and I guess this is another benefit for former foster youth, is for a number of populations, if a person's whereabouts become unknown, the county can't reach them at the annual determination period, that could be a trigger for the person being discontinued from Medi-Cal. The state statute says that for former foster youth, if there's a loss of contact, that should not result in a discontinuance from coverage. So in terms of what form, or if the youth is going to have to or is going to receive anything at the yearly renewal period, those sort of concrete details are still under development, but what we do know is it's supposed to be a very simplified process, and youth should have to do very little, if anything, at that yearly point in time.
Wow, that is great. That is good information. We have one last question. It's a good question, so thank you all for taking the time to write these in. And some of you are kind of raising your virtual hands, but you're listening to this on your phone, on your computer speaker. So the only way to kind of raise your hand and be unmuted is if you are using your telephone. So it's not that we don't see your virtual hand, so we can't unmute you. So sorry about that. But the last question, it's a good one, is, so what happens, you know, young people, when if they mistakenly, you know, identify themselves as a former foster youth, they think that they were in care. And I think, you know, it seems like how could they, but we run into that all the time where young people don't know their exact legal status. How easy will it be to rectify the matter once the county determines they're ineligible? And will they have any kind of financial liability?
No, when they check the box saying they're in foster care, the county will have to do, you know, the verification process. There should not be any penalty if someone mistakenly thinks they were in foster care, and it turns out they weren't. The county is instructed to assess the person for other Medi-Cal eligibility groups if it turns out that the person actually does not qualify for the former foster care group. So at the time that it's determined that the person, the individual, isn't actually going to qualify under the former foster care children's group, the county should be soliciting additional information to assess, for example, does that individual still qualify for Medi-Cal, but maybe under the new income rules.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. This is so much good information. We really appreciate it. I've been on the website. I was so excited about that. It's a great resource. We're going to do everything we can to just let people know about it. And I think what is unique about THP Plus, it's, you know, these young people are kind of like grains of sand. I mean, there's a lot of them, but relative to the general population, there aren't very many of them. And THP Plus is one program that if you're in THP Plus, you know, you are eligible, because to be in THP Plus, you have to have been in care. You exited due to age. And so we really want to capture all the young people in the program that qualify for this, so that in a couple quarters, when we run our quarterly report, we will have zero. Once this is fully implemented, every young person in THP Plus should be enrolled in Medi-Cal. So hopefully we'll work towards that goal. And thank you so much, Jessica, for giving us this information. And just appreciate your time very much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. So with that, we're going to turn our attention to something a little different. I know some folks are on the call primarily for this portion. We invite you to stay and think about THP Plus and THP Plus foster care. I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Simone Turek.
Thanks, Amy. So first, we're going to talk about THP Plus foster care. And as always, I like to clarify, because of the similarity of the names, THP Plus foster care is the transitional housing foster care placement for non-minor dependents participating in extended foster care, ages 18 to 21. Next slide, Amy. Okay, so here you can see this graph showing the number of providers. Now, every month on this call, we've been, pretty much every month, we've been providing updates on how the number of THP Plus foster care providers has grown over the past year or so. The placement first became available in October of 2012. And at this point, we have 38 different nonprofit providers licensed to accept youth into their THP Plus foster care programs. So a nice steady growth there, and hopefully we'll see that continue to increase. So between these 38 providers, there is THP Plus foster care housing in 39 different counties. Because as you know, many of these providers have housing in multiple locations, and many counties have more than one provider providing services there. What you're looking at here is a map of where there is THP Plus foster care housing located. For those of you who have been on this call many times before, you've seen this map, and you know that the blue counties are the counties with a high number of non-minor dependents in them, and the red counties are the counties that also have a high number of non-minor dependents, but that do not yet have THP Plus foster care housing located in them. And as we've clarified on past calls, this does not mean that those counties are not placing youth in THP Plus foster care, but it just means they don't have THP Plus foster care as a placement located in their county. For example, you know, Sacramento, you'll see, doesn't have a provider yet, but I do know for a fact that they have placed non-minor dependents in THP Plus foster care in nearby counties. Next slide. Okay. So we had a little brief little THP Plus foster care section. Now we're going to move straight into THP Plus. Again, I just like to clarify, THP Plus is the transitional housing program for former foster and probation youth ages 18 to 24. So today we're going to share with you a quarterly report. I think the last time we shared a quarterly report was last spring, so we thought it was a good time to, you know, revisit how youth in THP Plus are faring. This report covers the final quarter of the last calendar year, which is the second quarter in the fiscal year, So it runs from October 1st to December 31st of 2013. And this data is on a sample of 538 participants. Amy, next slide. All right. So what you're looking at here is how many youth were employed during the quarter. So as you can see, almost half of the sample were employed. 38% were looking for work but were not employed. And then 11% were not working and not seeking employment. Now, of course, some of these 11%, the youth that fall into this 11%, may be full-time students. So this doesn't necessarily mean that they are disconnected. It just means that they are not seeking work and they're not working. And you see, you know, a small percentage determined unemployable or SSI eligible. And so those are the youth whose disabilities or severe mental illness would prevent them from being able to work. Here you see that of the youth who were earning an income over the quarter, that the average income was roughly $914 per month. And the average hourly wage was $9.28. If you think of this in terms of what minimum wage is, I think it's at $8 right now in our state. So, you know, not a great wage there. The report also tells us that about half of the youth in the sample were receiving at least one form of public benefit, and that a quarter were receiving some other form of financial support, and that could mean, you know, financial aid or help from a family member. Let's move to the next slide. So we know that almost half the youth were working, but, you know, how many were attending school? So a little over half were not enrolled. 38% were enrolled. And now this could mean high school or college. And on the next slide, we're actually going to find out what type of degree they were pursuing. So, excuse me. So you'll see that of that 30%, 38% that was attending school, 22% were working towards a, you know, high school diploma or GED or high school equivalency, and a full 65% were attending a two-year institution, and then 22% also were attending a four-year. Here you see that roughly a fifth of the sample were custodial parents. This has been pretty consistent in THP+. The second bullet, which we've already kind of hashed out earlier in the presentation, the 71% with health insurance, as Amy mentioned, is very interesting. We are excited to hopefully see that rise to 100% soon, and it'll be cool to see in a few months when we run another quarterly report to be able to compare it to this one and see that number rise. So, you know, 92% report a permanent connection with an adult. The permanent connection, just for those who aren't familiar, this could be a family member, a mentor, you know, a former foster parent, a teacher, just an adult that you identify as a lifelong connection and positive relationship with. Now, the last few bullets you see, the 6% having been incarcerated or detained since entering THP+, that same number, having been convicted of a misdemeanor or a felony, you know, when you compare this to data on the general population of former foster youth, which is about 24%, 6% is not, you know, it's better. Next slide, Amy. So here I'm just going to really briefly run through this. We're comparing the quarterly snapshot report that we just looked at to the same quarterly snapshot report 6 months prior to just kind of see if there's been any movement in education, in employment, in earning income. And so this is employment and income, and you can see there aren't huge changes. The percent employed dropped slightly. The average wage and average monthly income increased ever so slightly. And so you can kind of see youth are not, they're pretty much in the same situation that they were about 6 months ago. And then when you look at this slide, education is looking a little better, you know, slight increases, slight decrease in custodial parents. What the salient point here really is that, you know, these are youth in a supportive housing program. These youth are connected to services. They receive, you know, counseling, case management, and whatever else that program actually provides. yet they're still struggling in several areas. And so what that kind of makes me think of is, you know, what about the youth who aren't connected to services, who aren't in THP Plus, who aren't receiving any sort of supportive services? Or even what about youth who are participating in extended foster care, but who are in, say, a SILP where they're not receiving any supportive services? You know, how are these youth doing? And it's concerning to, you know, think about. This is a population that does struggle. And so this is an interesting kind of, it's interesting to look at this data of youth who are, you know, obviously better off than youth who aren't receiving services and kind of see where they are. It can be very telling. So Amy, next slide. So those of you who were on the call last month, we introduced the THP Plus capacity chart. We started the chart because THP Plus providers, and I think Amy mentioned this earlier in the presentation, or on the call, were reporting having vacancies, and then at the same time, other providers were reporting having waiting lists. So the capacity chart lists who has waiting lists and then who has open beds and provides contact information so that the providers can contact one another or so counties can contact providers about referrals. According to the information that I've been provided most recently by providers, there are a total of 120 open beds and a total of 70 youth on waiting lists that are in need of housing. And there's really no reason why the youth on these waiting lists can't be given the opportunity to apply to a nearby program with open beds, even if it's out of county. And so that takes me to a next little bit of information we'd like to share with you. The John Burton Foundation checked in with CDSS, the California Department of Social Services, just to gain some clarification as to whether realignment had any impact on providers being able to accept out-of-county youth. And Amy referenced this earlier in the presentation. This is a question that we get a lot from people, and they're like, well, can we do that, and can we accept these youth, or can we send these youth that way? Here's the answer. This was provided this month by CDSS's legal department. You know, as you can see here, eligible youth may participate in a THP Plus program in any county with an approved plan. And then any county with an approved plan can accept youth from other counties into their program. So that's your answer. And we will move along. And the next slide is just showing the capacity chart or a modified version of it. The actual chart on the website has contact information, as I mentioned. I omitted that here for space purposes. But as you can see, the dates on the right-hand side of each column or of each kind of chart portion will tell you how recently that number has been updated. So as you can see, some people have sent me updates as recently as this month. And then some people, the last time I received an update was it was in December when they filled out that initial survey that I asked for. And so they're not super dated, but just to remind everyone, you know, the key to making this a useful list is to keep it updated. And so, as I mentioned, you know, when this call's over, feel free if you see a number on there that's not no longer correct for your organization, email me a correction, and I'll make it directly on the website. And then another option is, well, here's the URL where the capacity chart is available on the THP Plus website. And then you can either email me your updates or you can use the SurveyMonkey link that we created back in December. It's a few questions you answer, and I check that regularly, and so you can fill that out, and it will also be shown on the website. And then I also wanted to just share with you, I think we mentioned this on the last call, and many of you are already aware, we are creating a video on THP Plus. It's a short video, and the purpose is really for THP Plus providers to be able to illustrate how important THP Plus is in their community, whether the audience is the Board of Supervisors or other, you know, county staff or, who, you know, funders. I mean, really use this as you want. In early March, we're hoping to be able to send everyone the link to the video so they can use it and watch it. The video is going to include some providers, some youth, some advocates, and we're hoping for it to be a really strong advocacy tool.
Thanks, Simone. We have a few questions about, the content Simone presented, and we'll get through, let's answer those, and then we'll move on to the last portion of the call, and I think we'll end on time. So one question is a clarification from a representative of Aspirinet, that Aspirinet is in the process of getting approval in Sacramento, and it should have a license soon. And Sacramento County is ready to begin placing. So thank you for that update. That is very helpful.
That is great. Sorry, I just had to chime back in. That's very exciting. Thank you so much. And we will make that change on the slides for next presentation.
The next question is what, I think this is someone who was looking at the data on the quarterly report. What are the types of public assistance or financial support former foster youth are eligible for? Well, a lot of them. I can just answer that quickly, but just a few examples that that are counted within this category are food stamps, SSI, CalWORKs, GA, general assistance. Those are a few types of public assistance programs that former foster youth can access and we are going to and are accessing. It's and that is that's a good thing because that's what they're there for. So the next question is, to what might you attribute the decrease in youth reporting they received benefits or were insured? And I think the answer to that question is that our THP plus population, with the implementation of CARE Till 21, it has been aging. We've seen a dramatic shift in the demographics of THP plus. So we have, this decrease in insurance coverage that, it was only a 3 or 4% drop that, this report. But it's due that the people in the program have gotten older than 21. And so they have not been eligible for health coverage. And so that's really what it's about. And again, hopefully with the Affordable Care Act implementation, we'll start to see that number tick back up. And then one last question is, does the percentage reported for the BA, BS degrees mean they have already earned, like, the associate's degree? And the answer to that is no. That just means that that is the current degree that they are pursuing. But we do have a information about the highest level of education attained that wasn't in this, but we can share that. And it's interesting. And I think that as a program where you are all just really doing, so many young people come into this program without a high school degree. And the absolute strongest thing this program does academically is it lands high school diplomas. And it's not as strong. I mean, these young people have multiple challenges of, enrolling and then helping them persist in college. These young people, there's always that tension between work and education. And this is a real program with real demands. And what we find is the employment outcomes tend to traditionally be stronger than the education programs, than the education outcomes. But we will share the highest degree attained. And all of this information, all of you who is at your fingertips in pre-loaded reports, and if you have lost your login, Simone can share that with you. You can just shoot an email to her. Anything you want to add on that, Simone?
No, I think you covered it, answered all the questions. But, yeah, we can definitely, in the next time that we share the quarterly report, include some different info, spice it up a bit.
All right, well, one last item before we wrap up is, we always like to multitask on these calls, is a sign-on letter that the John Burton Foundation is involved in together with many other organizations. And this is an issue you might think, well, this is a THP Plus calling me or THP Plus foster care call. Why are we talking about this? But, those of you who are involved in the system know that, we don't operate in silos and that the better supported all young people are, that the more prepared they'll be for our programs. And so we really are turning our focus as an organization on young people placed with relatives. And in short, there's a big emphasis this year in the legislature in the budgeting process on reducing child poverty. And we're really trying to take advantage of that emphasis by shining the light on children who are placed with relatives who don't receive foster care benefits. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about why they don't, in a nutshell, whether they don't qualify for federal foster care. But what matters is that California is the only state in the country that, if you don't qualify for federal benefits, does not provide foster care benefits to relatives. There used to be a handful of states, and then as of a couple weeks ago, there were at least two states. Now we really stand alone as the only state that if a child is not federally eligible, we say, I'm sorry, you don't get foster care, you get CalWORKs. And frankly, I really wouldn't care if the benefit levels weren't so different. And here on this slide, you really see how different the benefit levels are. So if a young person who is living with in a placement where the child is federally eligible versus non-federally eligible, that third line, you can really see it's a difference between of $351 a month versus over $2,000 a month, and that's a young person who's a regional center client. And even just your, kind of garden variety 15-year-old, the difference is $351 versus $820. So I'm sure, you guys know about this, and I'm sure you care about it. This isn't something, it costs money. It's a hard push up the hill, yet we're just asking you to join us in asking the legislature to revisit this policy and to really come into line with other states who have said, by gosh, we rely on these relatives and we need to kind of support them in the same way that we support non-relatives regardless of federal eligibility. So I'm sorry if I went through that too quickly. I do want to honor our time today. But if you're interested in this, if this seems something you want to get involved in personally or you want to bring your organization into, we have organized a sign-on letter, and we have got a very nice, succinct policy brief that really explains this in more detail than I'm able to right now. So we'll send out this survey, this presentation today. All these links are live in it, and you can add your organization's name to this sign-on letter if you're interested. But the last thing before we go is, today is the last call for my friend and colleague, Simone Turek. So Simone is very modest, and she may not have shared with many of you that she has been had the honor of will be joining the Alameda County Foster Youth as its next executive director. And, I just really can't share, enough how much she does here, how much support she provides to our THP Plus and THP Plus foster care community. She's the one that gets it all done. She's the one who keeps everything up to date. And I think we all owe her a tremendous debt of gratitude for her hard work. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to work with her. She's fun. She's professional. She's smart. And I'm so happy for her. Wish her the best in her next step as the Alameda County Foster Youth Alliance. So if you've worked with Simone and you want to have the opportunity to say goodbye to her in her capacity at the John Burton Foundation, she'll be here with us through the first week in March. And then after that, onwards to a new and exciting role serving young people, still involved but not here at the John Burton Foundation. So I can know we're all as a virtual community in a big group hug for Simone right now. So that's my gushy goodbye for her, but thank you all again for being on the call. We're still going to keep these up, and it won't be the same without her, but we'll do our best. Thank you all for being on today's call, and we appreciate your time, and we'll send this presentation and the recording out shortly. Have a good day.